Wasallam. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Cost of living crisis is a term that is associated with Europe these days more than other parts of the world. The country that is in the lead in Europe is the UK. A series of labor strikes and industrial disputes have occurred in various industries of the UK's economy, as workers have walked out over pay and conditions, the most recent one being junior doctors and consultants. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why so many workers in so many different sectors of the UK are striking and whether the Sunak government has been able to handle the issue properly. First, let me introduce our guest for this program. Keith Philbin, Professor of International Economics and Finance at City University, joins us from London. Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joins us from Bristol. Welcome to you both. Keith Philbin, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on this strike by doctors and consultants? It's a three-day walkout, but it is said that it's going to affect, obviously, the care that patients are going to need. And that's another whole question that I'm going to ask on that regard. But do they stand a chance? It sounds like the government has to come to the negotiating table, but are they going to do that?
Well, the government, let's be honest, is out of money. They wasted so much money during the COVID pandemic, etc. Yeah, PPE equipment. They don't have much money left. We've still got a massive fiscal deficit in this country, all right? And therefore, there really isn't the money to make big pay rises in the public sector. So at the end of the day, the government must also realise that these strikes are extremely costly because they're leading to people not getting their medical care on time. That means they're off work, not paying taxes, etc. So at the end of the day, there has to be some sort of compromise. It's going to be nowhere near the 35% catch-up the doctors would like. That's never going to happen because it would just spark off further pressures in the public sector. But an inflation-matching pay rise is certainly something the government can afford. And we've got to remember that a lot of these people, you know, particularly consultants, they're getting taxed at 62% for quite a bit of their income, between £100,000 and £125,000.
I'm sorry, how much did you say?
62%.
62%?
62%. Yeah, because they lose their tax-free allowance, which is also taxed at 40%. So if you earn an extra £25,000, between £100,000 and £125,000, which a lot of consultants are in, £15,500 goes to the government and £9,500 goes to them. So not many people know about this, but this is clearly another thing that is, you know, really, I mean, the government wants to cut taxes for the wealthy, but won't cut it for the middle classes, who are being taxed outrageously at 62% for a certain amount of their income. It goes down afterwards, after 125,000, it drops down to 47%, which is still pretty high, but it's 62%. And that actually gets a lot of doctors, you see. So Liz Truss, when she did these tax cuts for the very wealthy, okay, above 160,000, which, you know, that seems rather stupid when she could have actually done something for these doctors that are between the 100 to 125,000, all right? So that's stupidity of the first order. And it's a stupid tax anyway. It's actually holding the economy back because lots of doctors stop working when they've got £99,900, okay? No one wants to be taxed at 62%. I'm not making these figures up. They're facts. You can go to the HMRC website and check them out. So,
I'm sorry to jump in, but I just checked out what you said in terms of taxes, and I put an average worker, and I'm shocked to find out that it says the UK's take-home pay of an average single worker after tax and benefits was 76.4% of their gross wage, compared to the OECD average of 75.4%. How does that? This changes the whole tone of the program. How do you figure the government? What comes to mind is if they're taking that much taxes away, it must leave the government more room to negotiate. But then they probably are banking on these taxes in terms of revenues that they're spending in other places, I'm guessing.
Well, you see, you also, when you earn your money, they take off income, national insurance off you and everything like that. But then, of course, they're taking VAT when you earn your spending money. So you're paying even more when you fill up your car with petrol. Right. You know, you put £100 in, £75 is probably off to the government.
Let me bring it.
So it's shocking rates of taxation we're facing. And basically, the government can't raise taxes anymore. That's clear.
Right. Let's bring in Tony Gosling in here.
On the wealthy.
Let's bring in Tony Gosling in here. Tony Gosling, I'm sorry to take so long to get to you, but this is just shocking stats on the tax issue where, aside from the government, putting that aside, how do people survive if that much taxes are taking out? Because that's something that was overlooked and not really spoken much about when it comes to the workers and the pay they're getting in terms of how much taxes that's being taken out.
It's built into the system. As there is inflation, as is now running food inflation nearly 20%, it's just coming down a little bit, but that's where it's been. So everybody is moved up into the higher tax brackets. And what they've been doing is they've not been moving the tax brackets. So people at the moment, on average wages, are being taxed like maybe a decade ago the super rich were. So these rates of tax, and it's the same with housing, exactly the same with housing. So, you know, say, for example, the inheritance tax thresholds haven't been raised, even though the price of housing is going up. So as the economy starts to fall apart, more and more middle earners and low wage earners are moving up into the high tax rates. And actually what's happening is work is no longer a way out of poverty. So people are starting to work and then finding that they're actually ending up with less money than they've had on benefits, and they simply cannot pay the rent and they're being evicted from their homes, this sort of thing. So you're right. Welcome to basket case Britain, because the economy is in an absolutely terrible state. In a way, it's a kind of hybrid war, the same hybrid war that's being waged on Ukraine. And of course, if you think about it, but it's being waged on the British people as well. And if you think about the amounts of billions that have been spent on Ukraine, it's quite obvious the government does have the money to pay the doctors. They have a choice to make. Do they want that money to go to arms and to arming this proxy war we're doing for the Americans over in far distant Eastern Europe? Or do they want to pay doctors properly? And the fact of the strikes, I'm absolutely 100% with the doctors, because the doctors know that what's happening is the senior staff in the health service, particularly the professionals that are making the life and death decisions, the consultants, the doctors, the registrars, are moving abroad because the pay is too low here. They cannot afford to pay the rent, to pay the mortgage on those wages. And so they're going off to get much better wages abroad. And so they are the ones who are trying to save the health service by flagging up to the nation that they need to be paid proper wages in order to keep the NHS alive. And of course, if you think about the government we've got at the moment, the Conservatives have always wanted to destroy the National Health Service, this free health service for everyone in the country. The Conservatives don't like that. They want to go over to a American-style health insurance system. And actually, the American health companies are all, they've got very busy London offices because they are lobbying for this change too. So they're trying to destroy the National Health Service, and they're doing that by making sure the doctors just leave the country, flee the country and go abroad.
Well, let's move on beyond just the health service and take a look at other sectors of the UK economy if we can, because this thing about taxes has thrown me off. But Keith Pilbeam, nevertheless, I'd like to ask you about one of the things that are in the basket of expenses of an average person there in the UK and across the world, really, in a matter of speaking, and that's the cost of food. We know food prices have risen, but by how much have they risen? I'm trying to get an idea based on going through the inflation, which puts it at around 7 or 8%. But I think it's a lot more than that, because when you look at categories of food, or just food itself, whether it's margarine or eggs or other items, you can see that it's a lot more than that. It depends what you're looking at. It doesn't really come out to the 7 or 8% they're talking about. What's the story there?
Well, food inflation is much higher than 7 or 8%. It is actually around 17%. Of course, it depends. For different people, it'd be higher or lower, depending what food they eat. But food inflation has been running particularly high, which impacts the poorest people. You see, the headline rate of inflation, 6.8 now, but don't forget it was 10.9. That doesn't mean everything went up by 10.9 or 6.8%, all right? Some things go up far more. And of course, poor people spend proportionately more of their money on food. So the inflation rate facing poor people is substantially higher than the headline figure. Everybody knows that, the government knows that, and no one can deny it. So that is causing poor people problems because, you know, they spend more of their money on food and rent, of course, which has also been skyrocketing. So the Bank of England, I believe, is trying to do some analysis of this. But, you know, if you're in the lower 20% of British income, you're getting, you know, inflation plus tax rises and council tax going through the roof. It's miserable.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, Tony Gosling, when I read this headline, I felt a sigh of relief for the people there in the UK, where The Guardian, I'm going to say the name, ran and said UK food prices fall in September for the first time in 2 years. But then you read the print below that, taking a closer look, it dropped by 0.1%. If we're looking at 19.4% or 19.1%, and they cited that as being food inflation for 2022, that's not much of a price drop, if you ask me. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot at all compared to the rate of food inflation.
What's
the impact that it has had on poverty there in the UK?
Let me just explain. It's not really a price drop at all. What's been happening is these German-owned supermarkets, Lidl and Aldi, have been opening across the country. They've been doing very well and opening new stores over the last couple of years. And so what we're seeing is more and more people leaving the mainstream British supermarkets and going to these German cheapo supermarkets. And so therefore, that's the only thing that's really been bringing. The fact of the matter is that these massive food cartels have been price fixing. They know they've got a pretty much a stranglehold on the market, that the small grocer shops dotted around the country, there's not many left, are really not able to compete with these massive supermarkets anymore. And so they do deals with the supermarkets as a cartel, and they've been slowly putting up the prices. In fact, there've been one or two supermarkets, such as Sainsbury's here in Britain, who have actually refused to stock products like Heinz products, for example, because these massive food conglomerates have been price fixing, and they're saying, well, this is far too much. We want to sell someone else's baked beans or whatever, and we're not going to sell yours because your price is way too high. Your margins are high. And of course, this is just being done to the benefit of shareholders, because they now have such a stranglehold on the food market that they can start to jack up prices anywhere they want. And I mean, this is, of course, as Keith says, it's affecting the poor far more. And that's the perversity of all of this, is that you've now got the rich paying virtually no tax. These are the people, by the way, if we wanted to raise tax, we've got lots of super rich people that we could be taking this money off from their investments. You know, say, for example, you've got hundreds of millions of pounds invested. Well, if you were to lose half of that, you wouldn't even notice a single difference in your lifestyle. And so that we should be morally doing. We should be grabbing that money. Even if it is offshore, or if as soon sure. as we should, we need to take the money off the rich. And what's happening is with this food price inflation is the poor are being hit and the rich are being left scot-free. So it's almost certain. I mean, we've had the big speech today by British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak at the Conservative Party conference. They've got a general election next year, so it's probably his last chance to sell the Conservative vote to the voters. And he's come up with absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. And he's talking about change, but we know that he's not changing anything. So it seems to me, and in fact, I've heard this from insiders, okay. that there are many people at the top of the Conservative Party here that don't want to win the next general election. So they're not interested in dealing with these issues. They're only interested in looking at their apps on their phones to see how much dividends on their big share investments Indeed. That they're getting. That's their interest. The public and the voters are nowhere in the equation.
We're going to talk about it a little bit more, but I'd like to ask you an economic question here, Keith Pilbeam, because it seems like it's a contradiction, but yet it works out for the benefit of the economy somehow, which is why I want to ask you, and that's the deal with interest rates. All right, we know that there's interest rates that have been risen on a number of occasions by the central bank, and that is the way to tame inflation, for lack of a better word. But when you raise the interest rates, it's got its pluses and minuses. Can you please explain to us how that works out? Because we know that there are obviously setbacks based on the impact it has on the different sectors of the economy.
Well, interest rates, of course, they've gone up. But what one must remember is that they were manipulated by the Bank of England to record levels for numerous years, barely below 1%. All right. So even on 10 years, the government could borrow, listen, at 0.6% with inflation target of 2%. That made no economic sense whatsoever, by the way. That's, you know, and all these people that invested in those bonds, including pension funds, by the way, that was stupidity of the highest order. I mean, no one should be lending to governments at 0.6% with an inflation target of 2%. All right. So now they can't print any more money. They've printed so much that it's actually one of the big causes of inflation. They won't admit it. Andrew Failey, I insist on calling him Failey, not Bailey. You know, he printed so much money, it's just incredible. $300 billion in 1 year to pay for all this COVID and fiscal deficits. So eventually, you see, that's going to come home to roost. And interest rates are bound to go up when inflation goes up. And now inflation is up and not really under control because people are still trying to catch up because they lost out last year on their wage rises, you know, less than inflation. So they're trying to catch up this year. It's not going to go down quickly. The Bank of England was, as usual, asleep at the wheel. They said inflation would go to 4.5, you know, well outside their target, by the way. Then it went to 6. Then they were forecasting 8. Then they forecasted 10. I mean, the Bank of England should be closed as an institution, you know, with its forecasting record. And the governor sacked. So we've got to get used to much higher interest rates, all right? Because we've now got record levels of debt. The government has borrowed so much money that the national debt has gone from, you know, to over 100% of GDP. Companies have borrowed too much, all right? When interest rates were low, what do? They borrow. And of course, people borrow to buy houses at absurd prices. And when interest rates go up, it's bound to hit the property sector
Sure.
and many other sectors. Zombie companies, they've been kept alive through low interest rates, okay? But now interest rates are going up, those zombie companies have to liquidate, go bankrupt, and we're seeing that increasingly, bankruptcies everywhere. And it was all because of the incompetence of the Bank of England. They should not be celebrating getting inflation down to 6.8 or 5. It is ridiculously high. It is still well above the maximum of 3%. It's 2% plus or minus 1%.
Okay.
So this is not any success. This is failure. You can't celebrate failure of that degree and Sure. say you're doing something.
All right. Tony Gosling, you talked about Sunak. One of the things that has come out, and I'd like to ask from you, whether it's a reflection of the types of decisions that go against maybe improving the economy, and that was the cancellation, from what we understand, of the scrapping of the HS2. which was said that it would have cut journey times, would have created more space on the rail network, and also would boost jobs outside of London. What are your thoughts, first of all, on his decision on doing that? And tell us some of the flops that he has actually is guilty of when it comes to the economy, the decisions that maybe that he made that has impacted the economy negatively.
Well, look, these massive infrastructure projects like HS2 should never have been signed off in the first place. That money could far better have been spent on upgrading existing railways, opening maybe some of the railways which were shut in the 1960s, and that sort of thing would have been extremely good for the environment. But no, most of the pressure to sign those contracts to build this railway were there from the construction companies, because they've made an absolute fortune on this railway to nowhere. It is just from London to Birmingham, which is, there is an existing fairly good service there anyway, which they could have used maybe one-tenth of this money to upgrade that service. The whole thing is, I think, a contract fraud that was signed by the end of the last Labour government in 2009. And then the Conservatives, if they had had a look, a proper look at the books, should have just scrapped it as soon as they came into office in 2010. But they don't like that. It's embarrassing. And there may be costs. They actually had Jacob Rees-Mogg quite bravely said that the whole thing should have been scrapped 5 years ago. He said that. So, this is a disaster. It's good that it's gone. The other thing is, the other infrastructure project near me in Bristol is this Hinkley C nuclear power station. Again, there's no real guarantees this is going to deliver affordable electricity ever. And yet billions are being spent on these projects. I think it's just really about the construction contracts. Those companies are going to definitely get lots and lots of money, but there may be nothing at the end of it to deliver. So this is, I think, a massive fraud. Enormous mistakes he's made, sure. Sunak. And, of course, the chances are he's never going to make it to win an election next year. No chance. It's most probably going to be a hung parliament, because the reason is because this has not been an economic crisis for everybody. The super rich 0.1% have done incredibly well out of this Conservative government, and they have actually seen their billions multiply. And those are the people who are calling the shots. And that's why it's almost impossible that Sunak, because he came up with something today about smoking, for example, which you think, well, this is not going to win you the election, mate. No chance. And so he's got nothing to offer, really, except empty words. And so we're probably going to see a Labour government next year, and the Conservatives are going to applaud their leader as he just drags them down into a black hole, never to be seen again.
All right, I got one last question over here. I was going to talk about how the rich got richer, but that almost sounds like a cliche. So, Keith Pilby, my last question is about manufacturing in the UK, where it is said that there's been it's been on the decline, to the point where many headlines read why the government has actually abandoned the manufacturing sector. Is it that bad? Has manufacturing declined to the point that the UK doesn't really make anything anymore? In a minute, if you can, please.
Well, we've still got the manufacturing base, but it's been decimated by Brexit. And you see that in the car industry. You know, output is now half what it was in 2016. No one wants to invest here. You get the odd thing that comes up because the government's subsidising it. Yep. Second the subsidies run out, they'll be either asking for more money or closing these factories. So it's been in decline for many years. This government doesn't care about manufacturing. We do have some good manufacturers, by the way. But the death knell has been paperwork, bureaucracy and Brexit. Their closest market is, of course, now very difficult for them, especially small manufacturers. You know, they used to use the EU to grow a bit bigger. Now they don't grow bigger. They stay in the UK. And also, they can't get the parts so easily from Europe because they don't want to supply them because of the paperwork again. So it's all self-inflicted. It's, you know, the whole country's gone to pot, really. And it's incompetence of the government. It's not just Brexit. It is the most incompetent government we've probably ever had in the last 10 years. I can't think of any government over the last 10 years, including, you know, that includes Boris, of course. But this shambles is just 13 years of disaster. Look.
Yeah, okay, but 30 seconds, yeah, but, 30 seconds, Tony Gosson.
Okay, well, look, the trouble is that Britain lost control of its industrial policy not because of Brexit, but when they entered the EEC back in the 1970s, Britain has never had, Britain's governments have never had control of their economic policy. At least we still got the pound, which gives us a little bit of leeway. And ultimately, I'm afraid Britain is not going to be, and it's not just Britain, it's the whole of Europe. Germany
Indeed.
Is now
okay.
slumping sure. its manufacturing base. So Britain
Thank
can
you.
Shake hands with the Germans and say, we're going to go down together.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you. Tony Gosling, their historian and investigative journalist. And thank you, Keith Pilbeam, professor of international economics and finance at City University. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this
thank
edition
you.
Of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tahwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality. Back to
it's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, my dear sisters and brothers from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite program, Back to Reality. This is Asma at your service once more, and in today's studio, we have Sister Zainab and Sister Bita with us. Welcome to the studio, sisters. Assalamu alaikum, both of you.
Assalamu alaikum.
Well, Sister Bita, let's start with you.
Yeah.
Please introduce yourself briefly.
For sure. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners and dear sisters here with me in the studio. I'm really honored to be here again with Get Back to Reality. I am Bita and I'm studying medicine at one of the universities of Tehran in Iran.
I wish you luck and happy
Thank you.
For you to be here with us. You, Sister Zainab, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm Tarfadulin Zainab from the Kashmir. I have done master's in linguistics, and right now I am studying Hausa in the seminary of Qom.
Thank you very much, and very welcome to today's episode of Back to Reality. Well, I have a grandmother, and since, as you know, all the old people, old generations, they have their own box of secrets. She always tells us, whenever you intend to do something, do not reveal it for every single person that comes into your existence. So whenever you have a plan, try to keep it for yourself and do it, go for it, and then let it be clear by itself. Do not tell anybody about your secret plans, about the things that you intend to do. And I guess she's pretty much right.
But I think the world is changing at such a fast pace that it has not made us like that. Because, you know, we have platforms today, especially on the social media world, when you are, as if you feel with yourself, I'm ought to tell people that where I'm heading right now, which trip I'm going to, or like which conference I'm attending or whatever. Wherever you're going, you have to update the public bit by bit, each and everything. Our platforms are made that way, unfortunately, today. But yes, I think not everything should be revealed. You know, we also have concept of evil eye or jealousy
exactly.
or many yeah. things around. So that happens. So it's better like not to say. And we have Imam Ali alayhi salam says that if you be quiet, it signifies that you are intellectual.
Yeah, so it's a sign of wisdom.
Exactly. Right. You know, when I was a child, I was always excited about things I wanted to do.
And it
was my personality. And I always showed my plans to everyone, like, you are my friends, I have to tell you that what I'm doing. And my mother always, you know, always was telling me that you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't tell your goals, whatever you're doing, I don't know, whatever to anyone. And as you mentioned, like, we have the concept of evil in our religion and in Holy Quran too, that you know, it's not always a bad thing.
Yeah.
It can be out of their love.
Exactly.
And you know, they want you so much to do this that you know, the energy will become so strong that will happen, that will be in
something
a way
odd
that,
will
yeah,
happen.
Exactly. Something
Even
odd.
Maybe they do not have any evil wishes
exactly.
towards you, but something odd happens in the middle, as if when we had it in these literary
yeah.
texts that said, when you're too happy, don't laugh so loudly.
Exactly.
Because then sadness would hear And then, because she cannot stay in the corner, so she gets in the middle of what you are doing, and then everything is going to go destroyed.
So we have this concept in our literature, in our culture, in our religion specifically, and I believe in that, you know, because it happens a lot in my life that I told someone my plans, my travel to somewhere, and it didn't
everything
happen.
Everything destroyed. It got
blocked. For an odd reason. Yeah. For nothing, you know, it was canceled.
You come to say to yourself, okay, what happened? Everything was ready. So what happened? So I guess we can go for a short break and then we'll be back to pursue the rest of the story. Welcome back. You're listening to Back to Reality. This is IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Asma, and Sister Zainab and Sister Bita are here, and I'm honored to be sitting with them. We're talking about the fact that we shouldn't talk about our plans with others. And scientifically, even, it is proved that there is this reward system that when you wish to do something, your brain, merely knowing that you're going to do something, as if it gets the reward, and then all the energy, all the motivations that you have will go drained.
Exactly. Since you said scientifically, I also had science up to my graduation, and also I used to go for all those research and read about them. So scientifically, even if you want to sleep, and you just plan to sleep.
Exactly. Now this one is so tangible.
Your brain already, starts deactivating the, you start feeling like lazy before you go to the bed. Because you just planned it. And the brain, you know, it signifies to other parts of body, it's time to rest. And then if you like, you know, you have what makes it more faster. Like, you know, sometimes we had these questions regarding the kids who don't go to sleep at time. What should be done? So then the psychologist or reply that, you know, change their pajamas or things like that. They will sleep earlier because brain understands.
Of sleep.
Yes, because brain understands all those things. So, yeah.
It's the habit formation.
Right. So same thing happens with this case as well. But I think, again, we should, again, rely on those traditions about, like, why is it good to be silent, or why is it good not to share, or why is it good to be, you know, what signifies wisdom and why. So not everyone thinks like you. That's very important to understand, because when you start sharing things, you think like, okay, my intentions are her intentions or his intentions as well.
You see intentions the world differ. According to your own perspective.
Right.
Another reason that I believe that is one of the most important factors that we have to keep these goals to ourselves is when we talk to many people about our goals, about whatever we are doing, they have comments, they have advice, they have their own thought and mindset.
They would demotivate you as well.
Exactly. And little by little, all these things will affect you. And so you have to really be aware of whatever you are listening to and whomever you are talking to about your goals. And
it's all about impressions and feelings that you would get from other people's feedback.
And energies even.
Exactly. I'm going to tell you that I'm going to do this for tomorrow, and then you would tell me something. The other person is going to tell me another thing. And all of these impressions put together.
Yeah.
And when I come to the night, and then I say, okay, what's the use of doing that?
Exactly. And you feel like you're distressed, you're under pressure, and all these feelings together. And that's why I feel like writing is always the best method ever.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. And it's just to yourself, and Allah is just watching that.
Exactly.
So when you do that and you trust Him, then everything is going to be more prosperous than the way you trust in other people and tell them about the things that you want to do. Well, even in our narrations, we have it that Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam say that, keep some things as secrets from others. One of them is the travel plan that you have. The other one is the properties that you have. Also, we have the religion. You should keep it as a secret from other people in many occasions. So, yes, we have to practice that because it's going to be better for us. But then let's go for a short break and then we'll be back for the rest of today's episode.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Okay, yes, we're talking about keeping our plans as a secret from other people, whether it be your friends, whether it be your close circles or the strangers. Because as we just said, there are some scientific factors, there are some impressionistic factors, and there are some psychological issues that might get in the middle of what you're going to do, and then they would work as impediments to your improvement or the things that you are going to do.
It is becoming more difficult these days to keep everything to yourself because we have social medias, we have personal and private pages that we want to share everything in that.
But do we have to share?
No, not really. And it's becoming an like kind of extra addiction, which it doesn't have any benefit or something, but we do it out of habit.
I still wonder why.
Exactly.
Why do I have to know where you are going?
And we have these bloggers that they show every single part of their life, everything they want to do. I mean, we are living in such an atmosphere, okay? So going against a wave, going against a flow, exactly, is a really difficult task for every human being. But it doesn't change the mere fact and basic value that we have to keep these goals and schedules to ourselves.
And aside from that, I suppose that as human beings, every single one of us has got a school of thought. Maybe those people think that it's a good thing to share everything with others. And I still wonder how they don't get affected by people's comment or things like that. But then, unfortunately, we have to believe that media has got an effect on us.
Yeah,
it has. It has. Like you, I think the main thing that is all this is taking away from you, or even if you are not sharing it on the social media, you're just sharing with your friends and family and all, it's taking away your focus.
Exactly.
You are not able to channelize your priorities, your energies. You're all just, you know, distributing it. You're just giving it. And you lose your focus that way. You know, you don't know the challenges that I may face in this trip or in the work ahead that I have, you know, that I've shared now with people. These will not be the ones who will be helping me to, you know, sort out those, face those challenges or face those problems that are coming my way. So I think your focus goes away, your energy goes away, you're not that calm now you used to be, and you're not able to collect your thoughts, and ultimately you really don't know, how do I enter this particular situation that I was about to enter? All your focus is in sharing things.
Yeah.
You're not focused on your own particular thing. You're not prepared. You don't have. So that's why sometimes you even forget where I have to enter. How do I have to, you know, get into this particular thing? So focus, I think you lose focus by sharing.
You have to have your own life in a secret way, and you have to have your comfort zone and some people really close to you to share your thoughts and plans with them in order to fill the need and the gap to share your whole life in social media.
I was once sharing something very strange with someone, and the lady was like, she helped me a lot, I swear, like since then I always think twice while sharing. And she was like, can I help you with this? Like, you know, I realized I'm sharing something unimportant with her.
Exactly.
And she cannot, like, she made a very wise question, can I help you? Okay, thanks. Can I help you now? You know, so I was like,
Is it any of my business?
Yes, is it? Exactly. In other words, she said that. So since then, I often say to myself, if I have to share, is it of her business or not?
Exactly.
So I think this is very important. Now, like, we have to realize, we have to understand ourselves, whatever we are sharing. Can the other person, does it matter if I share or not?
Yeah, always try to. I guess this is a good one. You can, before sharing anything, you can just ask yourself, is it going to be important to them?
Does that matter
to them? Well, all of these people are not living my life. So exactly. The things that I'm going to do are precious to me, but they might not be to others. They would do nothing except then draining my energy. And as you said, distracting my attention from whatever that I'm doing and get me unfocused. So I guess be quiet. And that's a good advice from the wise people from the past. to keep things as a secret from the other people, strangers, friends, whoever. There are a very little number of people whom you can trust very much with your secrets, with your important plans. So don't haphazardly pick people out of nowhere and then share your things with them, because then things are not going to go the same way as you planned for them. So yeah, keep your secrets for yourself and do not share it with other people, especially when you have new plans. You want to do some new stuff. Do not share them with other people. Trust me, they might not have the same innocent feelings and ideas as you have. So that was all. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A wave of protest has been ignited across the occupied West Bank as the world continues to watch fresh videos of new massacres committed by the Israeli regime in the besieged Gaza Strip. This time, the anti-Israel protests flared after an Israeli airstrike targeted Al Ahli Baptist Hospital in Gaza. The raid killed hundreds of people, including children and women, who were sheltering at the hospital amid intensified Israeli airstrikes.
The attack on the hospital is terrifying and dangerous. It's an aggression against humanity. There were innocent children, women, and the elderly, as well as sick people, and hundreds more who came here to the hospital thinking it was going to be a safe shelter. The attack on the hospital tells the world the truth, which is we are the oppressed people. We are the ones being attacked and not the opposite.
The Israeli army is targeting every Palestinian thing. They lie. They're not only targeting Hamas or the Islamic Jihad. They're targeting all the Palestinian factions. They're killing innocent people. And here we have to say our occupier is one, and we must all together fight this enemy.
The protest in the occupied West Bank took place while U.S. President Joe Biden was on a visit to Tel Aviv, during which he met with Israel's so-called war cabinet. Israel's so-called war cabinet consists of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant, and Benny Gantz, a senior opposition figure and former Minister of Military Affairs. During the visit, Biden reaffirmed his support for Israel. Amid global outrage, Biden also tried to defend Israel, saying it was not responsible for the hospital attack. He instead blamed the attack on the Palestinians themselves, saying it was done by, quote, the other team.
It's not weird at all. One criminal is supporting another criminal.
Since day one, he has believed Israel's fabricated lies regarding the beheaded babies, the story that was later revealed to be a mere lie. Today, he is standing with the aggressor premeditatedly, regardless of what level the Israeli crimes have reached. They are acting the same as Hitler did.
Following the hospital massacre, a four-way summit that was scheduled for Wednesday in Jordan was cancelled. Biden was supposed to meet King Abdullah, as well as Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi during the summit. Abbas returned to Ramallah after the hospital attack and declared a three-day mourning and ordered the flags to be flown at half-mast. He called the attack a hideous war massacre that cannot be tolerated.
These protests, Palestinians say, are the least to express their sadness and anger at the Israeli massacres while genocide is being carried out in Gaza. U.S. President arrives in the region to express his support for Israel. Palestinians say he's complicit with Tel Aviv's regime. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Crowds of Yemenis filled the streets of the Yemeni capital to voice their anger against the Israeli bombing of a hospital in Gaza, which claimed the lives of over 500 innocent civilians. Protesters burned the U.S. and Israeli flag while chanting slogans of anger directed at Israel and its Western partners.
The people of faith and wisdom came out today to strongly condemn the crimes committed by the American-Israeli enemy. We tell the Israeli enemy that no matter how many crimes you commit, we will force you to stop. The existence of your regime is only temporary.
We will fight with Palestinians side by side and will liberate Palestine, God willing. The end of the Israeli regime will come about soon.
Prominent Ansarullah official Muhammad Ali al-Houthi, who was at the demonstration, slammed Arab nations and accused them of protecting the Israeli regime. He expressed that Arab leaders do not represent the sentiments of their people.
The leaders of the Arab nations today are at the forefront of protecting the Zionist regime. We have seen the masses in these nations take to the streets demanding access to Palestine to fight side by side with Palestinians. We saw this in Jordan and a number of other nations. So we tell these leaders, you are the ones protecting the occupying entity, and if you want to represent your people, you should change your current position.
According to some of the protesters who spoke to Press TV, condemning Israel for its crimes is simply not enough. They want Israel to be confronted militarily, and they also want to be at the forefront of accomplishing such a task. On a day of rage against the bloodshed of Palestinians, protesters here in the Yemeni capital are calling on nations like Egypt, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia to open their borders so that Yemeni fighters can march into Palestine to confront the Israeli aggression. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
European Council President Charles Michel chaired an emergency video conference of EU leaders on Tuesday night to discuss the Middle East crisis. Michel was asked after the meeting if Israel has broken international law by bombing a hospital in Gaza City, resulting in a huge number of deaths.
We got this information when we were together during this virtual meeting with the leaders. It seems to be confirmed, and an attack against a civilian infrastructure is not in line with the international law.
Seconds later, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen offered this response.
I need confirmation. I cannot comment at this moment.
Von der Leyen is facing criticism over her apparent biased handling of the crisis in favour of Israel. The President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins, seen here meeting von der Leyen at the end of last year, claims she has engaged in a, quote, thoughtless and even reckless set of actions. Von der Leyen has previously accused Moscow of committing war crimes for depriving Ukrainians of water, electricity and food. She won't make the same claim with respect to Israel's actions in Gaza. Her spokesperson has been asked why.
Israel has a right to defend itself in line with humanitarian international law. We are monitoring the situation. We're in contact with our partners.
Experts say EU leaders face potential political and security consequences unless they move to stop Israel's onslaught.
If you listen carefully to the rhetoric of Benjamin Netanyahu,
Some people say this is going in the direction of ethnic cleansing. So the European Union should pay careful attention that this is going to be contained.
Critics say it's incredible that EU governments and authorities are refusing to apply any pressure on Tel Aviv to stop. Von der Leyen is due to be quizzed in the European Parliament on Wednesday. A majority of lawmakers will support her position on the Middle East crisis, but she'll certainly face a tough time from a sizeable minority. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Tehran has hosted a conference on Palestine to discuss the latest developments in the besieged Gaza Strip. The event was attended by representatives of Palestinian resistance movements, including Hamas. The participants believe despite Israel's brutal bombardment of Gaza, Palestinian resistance fighters will be victorious at the end.
What's happening in Gaza is a genocide taking place in front of the eyes of all people across the world. But Gaza will not surrender, and the resistance continues to shoot rockets at the Zionist settlements. Undoubtedly, the Al-Aqsa flood operation will change the principles governing the conflict with Israel completely, or at least to a large extent, and this will bring good regional and international consequences. Victory will be with Palestinians.
Israel launched a war on Gaza on October 7th after Palestinian Hamas resistance group waged a surprise attack, dubbed Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, against the occupying regime. Israel's military has also ordered 1.1 million people living in northern Gaza to evacuate their homes amid signs of intensifying its offensive. Tens of thousands of Palestinians have fled south following the order. The United Nations has warned it is impossible for such a movement to take place without devastating humanitarian consequences. Human rights groups have stressed that depriving an occupied population of basic necessities is a war crime.
The only thing in front of our people today is to face alone the atrocities of this barbaric hegemony of and offensive of the Israeli army. And as I said, the diplomatic statements from the Western government, it's very, very weird and unacceptable by our own people. What is the meaning that the British and the American, they are announcing a war against our resistance? This is a resistance which has been legitimate under the international law because they are defending themselves against the occupation. We are under the occupation and we are in a state of defense against the continuous atrocities and offensive of the Israeli army for the last 75 years.
According to the Gaza Health Ministry, at least 2,750 Palestinians have been killed and 9,700 wounded in Israeli airstrikes on the Strip. Tehran says the history of the apartheid regime is filled with assassinations, massacre, torture and killing of children. It says Tel Aviv's horrific killing of Palestinian women and children is indicative of the destitute of the regime. Political analysts believe that Israel has no one to blame but itself for the war with Palestinians. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Huge numbers of pro-Palestine demonstrators marched on Downing Street Saturday amid the UK government's outpouring of support for Israel's regime. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has spearheaded a controversial British response to the latest violence in Gaza, a reaction which many have condemned as reckless and criminal.
These protesters are furious, and not just at the horrific images and videos coming out of occupied Palestine right now, but also at the British authorities, who are throwing accusations at protesters like this as somehow being anti-Semitic or sympathising with terrorism, simply for coming out and supporting the Palestinian cause.
Reports have already surfaced alleging that a Palestine activist in Manchester was arrested for wearing a Palestine flag. This comes after Home Secretary Suella Braverman warned that waving a Palestine flag could be classed as criminal in some cases.
First and foremost, it's very clear there is double standards. If a government is supporting Ukraine and Ukraine are resisting the occupation, then we have to say why is there a double standard for the people in Palestine when we know, without a shadow of doubt, 70 years have gone by, they are under occupation. So holding a flag It doesn't make sense for a people to come under attack only simply because they are showing solidarity for a people who are the Muslim and the people who are oppressed.
I feel disgusted and I feel unsurprised. At the end of the day, Palestinians, majority of us are Muslim. We are colored. We are not European. So I'm unsurprised and I'm disgusted from the racism that's been going on. I'm absolutely disgusted and I'm unsurprised, but it needs to end now.
Of the Palestinian diplomatic representatives.
In response to Britain's eagerness to support Israel amid the violence, Conservative Party MP Crispin Blunt issued a warning that the UK could face legal action if it does not do more to restrain Israel amid war crimes accusations.
I'm not entirely sure that my colleagues have quite grasped the legal peril that they are in or fully understand the international law in this area. You can't encourage powers to commit war crimes.
Onlookers watch in fear as Israel goes ahead with its bloodshed in the besieged Gaza Strip. Israel has already targeted Gaza with intense airstrikes. The brutal aggression has so far claimed the lives of more than 2,000 people and injured many others. Hundreds of thousands have also been internally displaced as a result of the regime's bombardment of the blockaded territory. Robert Carter, London.
Pro-Palestinian rally in Brussels once again attracted thousands after a similar event took place here last Wednesday. The misery being endured by civilians in Gaza and the unwillingness of Western powers to rein in Israel were factors highlighted by those in attendance.
Hospitals being bombed. Hospitals. They're telling people to evacuate. And then what happens? They're bombed again.
Yeah, they bombed the people who are evacuating. What would you say about that?
It is essentially, Gaza is a very big concentration camp.
My family is killed in Gaza yesterday. And my brother and my uncle, every people killed in Gaza. That is not good for Israel. Israel is not good.
One sign read, "It is not about religion, it is about humanity. Stop genocide." Campaigners claim that Israel is attempting to wipe out Palestinians with the assistance of some Western powers.
The USA and the EU are actually very hypocrites because a genocide is finding place at this time in 2023.
There are a lot of kids killed and people have to move from their place and they have nowhere to go, etc. And that's really, really horrible for the people of Palestine.
It's a genocide, it's not a war. It's not a war. Palestine has not a military power, has not nothing.
They say that they are for peace, but in the same way they are sending weapons, they are sending bombs. It's not fair.
European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen was in Israel on Friday.
Europe stands with Israel.
During her media statement, she did not mention Palestinian victims once. Activists are calling on EU authorities to help stop the bloodshed and worsening humanitarian disaster in Gaza. European Council President Charles Michel announced on Saturday that an emergency meeting of EU leaders will take place via video conference on Tuesday evening. This has attracted a lot of criticism on social media, with people asking if they think it's such an emergency, why wait until Tuesday evening? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Hundreds hit the streets of Istanbul to show solidarity with Palestinian people. The demonstrators condemned Israeli atrocities against Palestinian civilians and the siege imposed on the Gaza Strip. People chanted slogans against the United States, European Union, and Israel, accusing them of committing crimes by depriving Palestinian citizens living in Gaza from electricity, water, and medical supplies. They also condemned Israel's bombardment of the blockaded territory, which has so far resulted in the death of more than 2,000 civilians.
This state was built on bloodshed and forced migration. They continue to commit the worst inhuman crimes, and the whole world is watching. They are doing it with the help of the Western imperial countries. We are here to call our government and Muslim countries to unite their efforts to end this occupation.
The pro-Palestinian protest comes amid Western countries' unwavering support for Israel. This is while countries supporting the Palestinian resistance are very few. Protesters voiced their anger at their governments, who did not take serious moves to stop the bombing of Gaza.
We came here today to say that Gaza and Al-Aqsa Mosque, that they are not alone. Even if our governments did not move a finger to stand with Palestinians, we as people will always stand with the Palestine cause, for it is a humanitarian cause before all. We are here to voice our support.